freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
I don't read the internet, guys.
Take the bull by the hands.
On Seattle Sports.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
And Brooke Wire, you are. And Brooke, you are.
Styled by Simply Seattle.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk. Let that fire!
All right, we've been bouncing all over the place today. Lots of fun stories in the world of sports. 2 weeks and 2 days from now. Two weeks and 2 days away from the first round of the NFL draft. Then we'll have rounds two and three. And then, of course, the rest of the draft Saturday morning. Brock has been getting us ready by taking his college football knowledge gleaned on the road over the course of the seasons and helping us get to know some players that might be good fits here in Seattle.
The Seattle Seahawks select.
This is Brock Heward's Draft Profile.
You want traits? Check. You want a vocal leader? Check.
At the end of the day, you have to say, okay, what's best for the organization?
Can you make people around you better? And can you bring people together?
Every day at 9 a.m. leading up to the draft.
Ooh, that little hustle of mine. Sometimes I hear some of these opens and they just resonate and they just hit. That little line right there for Mr. Snyder is exactly what number 94 was for Michigan this year. Does he love to play? Does he bring people together? Does he elevate everyone around him? Defensive tackle Chris Jenkins does just that. As I say that name, you may remember a Chris Jenkins back in the day.
Carolina?
Yeah, you know what's just struck me? I'm looking at my board right now. There's no junior. You didn't need a junior put on it. And part of me is like, I wonder if that is super intentional. Like, you go make your own mark. Yeah, that was his pop's name, and his pop's was enormous. His pop's was a 330-pound, kind of Leonard Williams-esque guy in the middle that was so good for so long. Chris is not as massive as his dad, this Chris Jenkins. Measured the combine, in fact, at 6'3", 299 pounds. A lot more in that line of Byron Murphy and Matabuike. That if you want to use that Matabuike, is we heard last week from our buddy Matt Miller, like, okay, well, here's a Matabuike light kind of guy. He didn't run 4.7 like he did, but he ran 4.91. I mean, 4.91 at 300 pounds, one of the fastest times of any of the deep defensive tackles. In fact, I think it was the second fastest time. He jumped 30 inches. He broad jumped almost 10 feet. And then he repped out 225 29 times, one of the five best marks at the combine. Like, this dude is rocked up. I say to you all the time, Salk, I give you that image because I try to do this because imagery helps me help these stories stick. When Duane Brown would run out of the tunnels, a Seahawk, you just looked at him and you're like, well, that's different. You know, I mean, he's 310 pounds, but he looks like he runs like he's 210. That's Chris Jenkins. See him on a football field. And in fact, with the Michigan defense last year, he would often be lined up next to Kenneth Grant. Kenneth Grant, the defensive tackle that'll be a first-round pick in next year's draft, was 6'3", 340 pounds. He was massive and could also move. So you looked at Chris Jenkins, you're like, oh, that's a little itty-bitty guy. No, he's 6'3", 300 with 34-inch arms. It just so happens he played next to another massive guy. But he built what Jim Harbaugh would refer to constantly as the blue wall. You're not going to run against us. Built one of the best elite national championship title defense, and it started up front. It started with those guys, much like Mike McDonald's group in Baltimore and Mike McDonald's group in Michigan. Always starts with those guys up front. The production, as I said to you about an hour ago, is not off the charts. If you were to look at his years there at Michigan and you see a career 8 tackles for loss and 4 sacks, you're like, well, hold on a second, how in the world is this guy drafted in the first 3 rounds? He wasn't productive. What you don't see are the number of times that that man's nameplate never moved. So the NFL, college football, I think even some levels of huddle and high school football give you 2 different views on game tape. Give you a view from above and then give you a view from the end zone. So you can see the end zone tape. So you get a really good look at these fronts. And at Michigan, as it will be with the Seahawks, it will be imperative that you don't get turned, that you don't get twisted, that you don't get moved off your spot. We want to see your last name. I should see your last name when I watch that play on tape from beginning to end. In fact, they were graded at Michigan. Okay, can I see your nameplate? Can you stay that square? Can you take on double teams and be immovable? Can you know, we run you in slants and stunts and you still stay totally square? And that guy did. That's why he was a second team All-American and got the credit there from kind of the national folks. He was a captain on that team. Salk, I'm going back and looking at my board, and very, very, very rarely do I ever see things in quotes from a head coach and coordinator about a defensive tackle that be with Chris Jenkins. He's our captain. He's our guy. He's the difference maker. He's always been the difference maker. He's got a huge rate. If you wanted to study his like pass rush win rate as a D tackle, it's one of the best in college football. So you don't hear things many times from a head coach. You want to get Jim Harbaugh gushing? Yeah, he'll gush about J.J. McCarthy. He'll gush about his strain of his offensive lineman up front. You want to really get Jim Harbaugh gushing? Ask him about Chris Jenkins. Ask him about their captain. Ask him about the role that he played in doing what John Schneider just said on the intro to this little draft profile. Does he make the people around him better? Chris Jenkins does that. If he's drafted as a high third round pick, you know, depending on how they move their picks around, late second, high third round pick, if he's there in the third round, I want Chris Jenkins on my football team.
Sounds pretty good. Sounds very intriguing. His dad certainly was a heck of a football player. I remember him very well. Brought that team to a Super Bowl, right?
Yes,
I mean, they were sort of the first really, I guess the second good Carolina team, but really the first one. Jake Delhomme was the quarterback, and he wasn't anything special. What was special was the guys up front on that defense with him and Peppers and the rest of those guys. So, yeah, that's a good one, Brock. So, thank you. That is today's draft profile. Late third round, is it possible?
I don't know. I think those the stuff, the makings of the inside are going to make him too good. You read kind of Lance Zierlein, you read Matt Miller, you read DJ, you read those guys, and they will say frame wise, he's just not what his dad was.
Okay,
he's not what Leonard Williams is. He's not what some of these elite guys are. You know, I think that's closer to Jaren Reed. If I looked at Jaren Reed coming out of Alabama, I think you would see about the same, 6'3", 300. I don't think Jaren's got 34-inch arms. I mean, those are long arms. So if you're not going to be massive, massive, well, you got to use your hands. You got to use your arms. Mm-hmm. You got to be so good in your technique. And he was all of that and above. And once again, you know, you had said through free agency, is it kind of weird? Is it kind of strange? You know, you don't see a Raven here in Seattle. You think that, you know, Mike McDonald, all that background there. Okay. Well, if we don't see a Wolverine drafted, then it will be really strange because that is where you have so much equity. You have so much background. You have coaches on staff that have been there for all of these years with these prospects and know them inside and out. Mm-hmm. I'd be pretty surprised if we don't see one Wolverine on this roster. Certainly after the draft and as they head into phase two of the offseason.
Yeah, it has continued to strike me as odd. So we'll see. We'll see where that goes. Two weeks and 2 days left to go before the NFL draft gets underway. All right, take a quick break here. We're going to come back and give you guys everything you need to know. Yes, the Mariners played yesterday. Yes, it felt like deja vu. When will that change? Good question. It's all coming up. Brock and Salk.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Yeah, I think the word I would use is predictable, familiar, almost a sense of deja vu watching these Mariners this year. And some different names out there, but a very familiar look and feel to the start of this season. As the bats have been cold, the pitching has not been what it's supposed to be, the defense has struggled enormously, and it just has not looked the way anybody thought it would, including Scott Servais, who joined us about 2 hours ago.
I guess I'm a little surprised that we did not come out of the gates a little hotter. It's probably the most excited I've been about getting the season going, leaving spring training. Oftentimes, when you leave spring training, you have a lot of question marks. You know, how's the bullpen going to play out, or certain spots in your lineup. And I really felt leaving spring training, we would come out of the gates, you know, better than we have. But it is what it is. You know, we have just been hard to get much rhythm going.
Yeah, that was a word he used a bunch, and we dug into. Missed any of that? Please find that on our podcast, because the skip took a good 15 minutes with us. Going to have an awesome function Thursday night that you can go to and see Cal and JP and Scott, Scott's wife Jill, and raise some good money. So I think he felt that way because we all felt that way. Because you looked at the numbers, you're like, this isn't one or two guys that had a great spring. Mm-hmm. It was everybody. It was almost everybody from Polanco to Haniger to Julio to JP to Ty. Everybody was hitting and feeling good and rolling. And then you see big league pitching, and you see a guy like last night, and Barrios had just painted the corners, did not leave stuff over the middle, like unfortunately Luis did 2, 3, 4 times, and got damaged for it. And yeah, good pitching. Toronto's a good defensive team, dude.
Kiermaier in center is
just elite.
Isn't he awesome?
Holy smokes.
I have wanted him here in Seattle.
I know he doesn't hit
long.
Much either, right? I know some of the
challenge. He used to hit more. He doesn't hit as much as he used to.
Man, can he feel? Can he throw? Can he run? And can he instigate?
He's made two of the best throws I can remember of the last 10 years. Yeah. Like, that dude just got an absolute rocket arm in center field, and he always finds a way to make it relevant in whatever game he's in. Anyway, George Kirby, it'll be his turn to try to get this thing turned in the right direction. He goes tonight trying to put his last performance in the rear view. I got to tell you, I feel pretty good about George tonight. Coming off of that, his personality, the how awful that last game was, how prideful he is,
yep.
The stuff he's got. I feel pretty darn good about George Kirby tonight and then Logan Gilbert tomorrow. So that's the future here for these Mariners. Couple of roster moves yesterday. Samad Taylor back to Tacoma. Ty France returned from paternity leave. And then Colin Snyder, Cody Bolton, both to IL, replaced by Brett DeGuys and Tyson Miller. Poor Bolton. Poor guy. Mm. Got himself the kidney stone as a twice victim of the kidney stones.
So I got to listen to Foxworthy in person over the weekend, do a bit on his kidney stone.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. He said he waited for that thing. You know, you had to use that same little filter thing, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And he's like, this sucker, it had razor blades. It was covered with Tabasco sauce. It just absolutely debilitated him.
So he's lying.
I'm just saying it was.
Well, he's lying because that's the part that doesn't hurt.
It was very, very...
It doesn't hurt when it comes out.
While it was going through the process.
Oh, that's not fun at all.
It's the pain that
that part's not fun at all.
About. Yes.
Through the process, unbearable pain. Actually coming out,
yes.
Not a problem. Once it's out, you're like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's amazing. You instantly feel better.
We don't need to know this.
Uh-huh. More, this is what you need to know.
No.
Let's talk about kidney stones in 10 minutes.
Here's the second thing you need
I get
to
pain,
know.
Like phantom pains just yes. thinking about how awful that was. 18.7 million viewers, Brock, on Sunday. We can't talk about this enough. It is such a fun sports story. So many of the stories we talk about have a negative implication to them, something that's gone wrong, somebody's done something wrong, a team is losing and you're trying to figure out what they need to do differently. There's nothing wrong with this story. It's just a wonderful story about women's college hoops, about a person in Caitlin Clark who has turned the sports world on its head over the course of the last couple of years, but especially the last few weeks. And at its peak, 24 million people watched that game on Sunday.
Do we have time to play the Lisa Bluter there that I sent to you
I'm
from
play
the locker room?
After.
We'll do it at 9:30.
Yeah, we're going to do it at 9:30.
Yeah, pretty remarkable. And as you talk to Jeff Passan there, and you just wonder about some of the other sports and the impact she's had. I mean, it's Tiger-esque in golf. That's the closest thing that I can think of.
Yeah.
The Tiger changed golf. That you know, we all watched it. You certainly appreciated it. There were amazing players, Jack Nicklaus and Arnold Palmer and all of them. And then Tiger came around and just elevated everybody. And I sure hope she can do the same. The WNBA draft is next week. The documentary series comes out in May. They will be playing in the WNBA this summer. So this isn't like, oh my gosh, I'm going to forget about Caitlin Clark. Uh-uh. And at that kind of numbers, with that kind of reach, everybody and anybody and all these marketers and advertisers will want a piece of her.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Well, finally, Seahawks back at practice this week. Voluntary workouts, but... You know how I feel about these, Brock, and you feel the same way. Like, if you're going to praise guys for showing up and talk about their dedication and speak about why these things help your team win, then I'm going to criticize guys who don't have that level of interest in winning for their team. And so I love this. I think it's great to see that so many guys were there, and maybe all the more important given that you've got a whole new coaching staff to adjust to.
Well, I think that's, it's well said. It's not even a question. Even more important, you got a whole new regime. You got a first-year NFL offensive coordinator. You got Mike McDonald, a first-time young head coach. And the fact that Tyler and Gino and DK and Uchenna and all those guys are there for the first day of running and lifting, man, it's time on task, and it matters. It matters. And yes, I am biased because I watch teams that were not as talented, Salk. Marvin Harrison, Edgerrin James, Peyton, sure, super, super talented. But Jeff Saturday and Tarik Glenn and a lot of the other pieces and defensive guys that were largely no names and draft picks, the reason he won 12 games every single year was because April and May and June matter. the hay's in the barn as far as the work goes and the effort and the energy goes. And then the payoff comes when the training camp and the regular season begins.
All right, there you go. That's everything you need to know. I'll tell you what, Brock, we do have a minute. Why don't I play this now, and then we'll spend some time talking baseball at 9:30. But this was Lisa Bluter, who is the head coach at Iowa. She coached Caitlin Clark for the last few years. You mentioned yesterday that you ran into her at an airport mm-hmm. eating a McDonald's cheeseburger at 9 in the morning. Much respect. Yeah. Here she is talking to her team after their loss on Sunday.
I'm proud of y'all, you guys, so much, each and every one of you. So do not hang your heads. Celebrate the fact that we were here. Celebrate that we got to do this together, all right? Please, because that's what's important. You guys impacted so many people this year in a positive way. I mean, think of that, all the joy you brought to people, all the kids that you helped. That's what it's all about. Yes, you love a shiny trophy, but the impact that you had on young women in this sport doesn't get tarnished. It will always be there. You have raised this sport to a new level because of the way you play the game.
Amen, sister. The way you play the game and the way you handle yourself, right? With such class through the good and the bad and the ugly and all of it. And, right, that burden, Don Staley said so beautifully after the game, right there with Holly Rowe on court there, you know, just applauding Caitlin for just, it's a heavy lift, man. Heavy lift. The whole world is on you, and you've never been through this to this level, and no one in women's basketball to that level with 19 million watching your championship game, and yet she never cracked, right? And that team never cracked, and they never lost composure. And just, I don't know, man, I think of that team, and I think of just fierce competitiveness and tremendous grace. And those are hard attributes in this day and age in society to have as a sports team. And I thought they marveled at and resembled that.
Yeah, really well. I think that's really a nice sentiment. And I would even go so far as to say, just based on what I watched here in the tournament this year, it wasn't just them. Mm-mm. Right. That seemed to be a pretty and maybe that's one of the things that has endeared this story to so many people, including myself. But it wasn't just them.
Nope.
Gosh, the class and all of the things you just said absolutely applied to South Carolina. Mm-hmm. I thought LSU did a heck of a job. Correct. This year after last year, maybe making some waves. I thought they handled everything with great class and dignity, played hard. They were wonderful. UConn and Paige Beckers and Leah Edwards. Gosh, I came away so incredibly impressed by the quality of the people. Agreed. Up and down. Yeah. Really, really amazing. And, you know, if I'm Lisa Bluter, I'd be looking to cash in another job because I don't think she's ever going to do this in Iowa ever again. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Let's see. We got a rank coming up in 20 minutes. We got a good one today. And before we do that, we did talk to Scott Service, as you mentioned, and two or three things definitely jumped out. That's next on Brock and Salk.
You're listening to Brock and Salk.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
I think what surprised me, and I think Scott said it as well, was sort of the complete system failure of the first 11 games of this season. It's not just been one thing. It's been everything. And yes, because of the past history, everyone's going to point at the offense, and for completely understandable reasons. It's yet another season where the offense doesn't look like a major league quality deal. And they start the year and it struggles here, and they go on the road and it doesn't get any better. And now they've been playing in Milwaukee and Toronto, both hitters parks for sure. And you're watching this offense going, how can you not score six runs ever? Like, what's happening here? And yet, Brock, pitching three quality starts and 11 chances, the defense problematic. It's been a complete system failure throughout the first week and a half of this season. And I was maybe not as high on this team as some other people have been, partially because I think they overcorrected a little bit from last year. But I didn't see this.
No.
I didn't see a 4-7 start that quite honestly could have been 2-9 or worse just based on how they've played. Mm-hmm. I don't know that anybody saw this coming.
No, and the Skip certainly didn't, and he played that cut of need to know. But I think that is, you know, pretty telling too, is that coming out of spring never felt as good about just a group, you know, just the depth of the lineup, right? The strength of the rotation, which you did not give any piece of to the market that all wanted a piece of some of your young pitching, you know, and just you were hot. You started spring slow. I mean, remember that when we were down there and, you know, the first couple weeks equally, it was a bit of a slow start. And then all of a sudden, once we left,
right,
they put the whole thing together and we're as hot as anybody.
And they could do that again.
Yep.
Right. I mean, they're perfectly capable of it. I think that's why. And I'm going to keep banging this drum, I think, for a while, because I think it's important. Because I think last year, maybe I missed this element and people get really, really frustrated with the words "it's early," because it feels to them perhaps as if you're invalidating.
It's like a cop out.
Yeah. Or it's invalidating what we're seeing. And I hope you don't. I hope I can explain that that's not what I'm saying, or what Scott's saying, or what Passan is saying, or what anyone else is saying when they say it's early. Mm-hmm. No one's invalidating that the team is playing bad. They're playing like garbage. This has been a terrible 11 days for this team. They've been bad. They've played bad. There have been all kinds of problems, offensively, defensively, pitching-wise, you name it. They have not played good baseball. You're not imagining that. Nor is anyone telling you that these games don't matter. They do matter. Scott said they matter. I believe they matter. Passan will say that. Everyone thinks they matter. The players know they matter. And yes, they're all worth 1/162nd of the season, just like a game in August or September. Where I think you're hearing the difference is it doesn't necessarily predict what's going to happen for the next 150. The fact that they've played terribly for 11 games does not necessarily indicate they're going to play terribly for 150. And maybe this is the worst you'll see them play all year. Maybe not. Both things are possible. It doesn't leave out the possibility that this team is actually this bad. But what it says is it doesn't necessarily indicate it. Nothing can over an 11-game stretch, because that's just not how baseball's played.
Yep. And the actual indicators, things like, you know, three balls that Julio smokes last night, including the first one that you're like, oh, my God, you can't hit it any harder than that. Well, I think it was 114 miles an hour or something, that liner to Kiermaier. You just hit it right at him. You know, that some of the things you can predict, the quality of pitches, the quality of at-bats, the quality of contact, the quality that 8 of the 10 hardest hit balls last night, believe it or not, were by the Mariners, not by the Blue Jays. And yet the Blue Jays just kind of handled you, because that's baseball. It's those other two hits and when they do happen and who's on base and how they take advantage of it and how they just, you know, throw their barrel with really smart at-bat.
And you've got to do better than you did. It's not to excuse last night's game. You got to come up with a hit in that big spot.
Yes,
you've got to get out of that big spot when the Blue Jays haven't.
Yep.
It's just not necessarily indicative of what will happen next. And we asked Scott about that in particular. Well, I have to hit the right button, though. Here you go.
Yeah, if anybody's seen our season the last few years, they understand that we have turned it on, you know, once you get to the mid to the end part of the season, for whatever reason. And we were hoping that was not going to be what we need to do this year. But it is a long journey. And I think, you know, we talk about things that happen. You're still trying to find out about players. And sometimes there are certain games where you give players longer rope. There's sometimes early in the season you give them a shorter rope because you're playing the long game, wanting guys to have plenty of things left in the tank. So as we get deep in the season. So there's a lot that goes into it, but I say all that. Our guys understand that. They know we need to get better. You know, you can talk about the effort level. Are we doing the right things in our preparation? I think we are. But when the game starts, we got to execute.
Okay, so I want to compare that, Brock, because I think there's an interesting soundbite here that I want to hold that next to. That's what Scott said. This is what Ryan Divish said yesterday about managing a baseball team on with Wyman and Bob.
We didn't know that Gabe Spira was dealing with a neck issue that he tried to pitch through. You know, we didn't know, like, whether everybody's available or not. You know, like, we know that Ryan Stanek can't. They're trying to monitor what he can do and what he can't because he didn't have a normal spring training. So, like, some of their decisions are based on information that they have that we're not privy to, you know, and it goes beyond just the simple stuff we find on Baseball Reference. Like, people focus on the in-game decisions, but so much of those is, like, they have an idea of who they want, which pitchers they want to face which batters, in a game. You know, they have all the numbers and all the data. They still go by the gut feeling. But people think that's like the biggest role of the manager. I think for me, the manager's biggest role, and this has changed because I was like that, the manager's biggest role is like making sure that these guys play hard every day and prepare as much as possible to win, you know, and do the work and put in all the preparation and do everything possible to have the best outcome each night, and getting players to do that for 162 games.
So essentially Ryan's saying that maybe we're focused at times on the wrong things in terms of what makes a manager a good manager.
Yep. Yeah. It's managing the people and managing their discipline. You know, I've said this, I was talking to a college recruiter here a couple of weeks ago, and I've said this on the show, and I've certainly said on my broadcast, like I get tired of hearing the word competitive. Oh, he's so competitive. Oh, she's so competitive. Don't tell me what you are. Show me your discipline. Honestly, show me your day-to-day discipline, and I'll tell you whether you're competitive or not. Show me how you and when you go to bed. Show me what you're putting into your body. Show me how much preparation, how much work you're doing in the pre-workout, how much work you're doing in the post-workout. Don't tell me, never going to meet a more competitive person than me.
And for the record, if you go on and listen to the rest of the Divish sound there, he says that's actually something they do quite a bit.
It is.
They do show up more than others, and they do get early work in, and they do work harder than you're accustomed to seeing.
Yep. So that discipline and that attention to detail, and you know, I think this is obviously just a bit of a funk that we didn't see, you know, the last 3 weeks of spring training, and why Scott said he did feel so good about this thing. You know, it is interesting. So I think we will hear this the more that we get a chance to talk to Scott and listen over the course of this season. And we've always heard these numbers and the odds. But to me, when we sat down with Brant Brown, you know, and the numbers that he just rattled out and the odds and just, you know, it really is your blackjack analogy. You know, you just want to give yourself as many times as you can the best chance, right, for success. And right now it's fits and starts, and right now they're not doing it, and right now when they're getting that hand or they're getting that pitch, yep, and it was, you know, all the spin early in the first series or so, and you know, yesterday there were a couple times you even heard Dave Sims and Blow talking about it, like, ooh, there was your straight fastball.
There's your pitch.
There's your 95-mile-an-hour fastball that's covered a lot of the plate. And that's the one that you just have to, when that hand, and you got a face card, and they got a two, you got to take advantage of that hand. And a 4-7 start, they're not taking advantage of too many.
I think blackjack's always a very good analogy for it, because blackjack is such a process-driven game, right? If your process is right in blackjack and it doesn't work, you just kind of shrug your shoulders and say, all right, well, I did what I could do. I mean, you know, I got a bad hand, or, you know, I had a good hand and I did what I was supposed to do. And the next card out of the chute, unfortunately, just didn't help me. Like, those things happen in blackjack in a way that it's very, very frustrating.
You can't
do,
you can't get rash and emotional and upset, and then you
change your strategy or anything like that. No,
exactly.
That's exactly the case. Now, that doesn't mean, now the difference, of course, is that in blackjack it is entirely luck after that. In baseball, there is a skill element, there is a hard work element, there are adjustments that you can make. And if you heard one good thing from Scott today, and there were some things that, you know, he's going to be a pretty positive guy, I thought he did a good job of expressing his frustration and recognition of the problem, but also saying, look, it is only 11 games and he thinks it's going to change. This was probably the biggest reason for optimism.
He did make some adjustments.
Talking about Julio here.
He did make some adjustments last night. Hopefully he builds on that. You know, he finds a couple holes tonight and really gets it going, because again, the top of our lineup, they've struggled. They struggled to get on base. They struggled to produce. Like I said, you know, Dom Canzone, like Ty France is off to a great start. We've actually gotten very good production out of third base so far this season. So we do have some positives. It's just consistently up and down the lineup, it hasn't clicked yet.
Julio making some adjustments. There's nothing that will help this team more right now, well, other than the starting pitching doing what it's supposed to do, than Julio turning it around and being Julio. And I say that, and I know it sounds like a criticism of him. It's not. I don't think it's not like he's not working hard, but he's their best player. Yeah. And they need him to hit. He hasn't hit yet this year. It's been 11 games of, you know, mostly subpar performance from Julio. He just has one extra base hit so far this season.
Yeah. And
they can't win like that.
We talk a lot about Julio. We all watch Julio. He is an amazing, amazing talent. It does remind me, this is Masters week. Salk, do you know that the azaleas are in bloom?
I've heard that. Yes.
Yep. Chatted with my agent. He was down there yesterday going to the practice round today. It's supposed to be a beautiful week at Augusta. I had the just unbelievable privilege of being there in 21, and I'll never go again. I'll pull a Larry Hillsism. I'll never do it again because it will never be as good as that time when it was 50% occupancy and I could walk 10 miles and I could see anything and everything I wanted to see. It was spectacular. But I do remember the practice range, you know, going there and watching Salk and seeing, and this will tie back to Julio in just a second. Most of those guys are like your size. You know, most of them are just compact. There's not a lot of movement in their, you know, in it's just the muscle memory of that swing. It's almost like a... Oh gosh, what is that clock? You know, just like it is like
metronome.
Yes, it is. And you just feel the rhythm and the timing of so many of them. And then there was all of a sudden like Bryson DeChambeau came out and you're like, whoa, that thing is just different. And he's big, right? Bryson was just much, much bigger than most of the others. And I do wonder with Julio, just at that size, we hear this word adjustment a lot with him over 3 years. You know, just a little adjustment. And it's just a little subtle adjustment. But when you're that big and you're that strong, I do wonder. Like if that causes some of those tinkerings, right? Some of those, you know, just a little adjustment of my balance or my body or my swing or my hands or, you know, just that is different when you're 6'3", 230 versus 5'9", 180, right? There's just more moving parts. There's a longer swing. There's more movement to it. And for him to just feel right, timing and tempo and all that it takes, because it's been 3 years where we've heard this, just a little adjustment. Right, just spending the time to get that foot down or whatever it is, just that little adjustment that it does take, I think becomes a little bigger, magnified when you're a bigger guy, when you've got more range of motion and more moving pieces. Maybe I'm dead wrong on that, but it does strike me that the bigger guys over the years, right, the Aaron Judges, the Giancarlo Stantons, the Nelson Cruises, do have some ups and downs because there's a whole lot more going on in their
Yeah,
swing.
I guess so. I mean, I think there's something to just power hitters, right? Because it's a little bit of a fine line what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether it's going to be any more of an issue for Julio because of his size. You know, Barry Bonds certainly didn't seem to have that problem as he got bigger. And, you know, Well, but again, he got bigger. Taking steroids is not going to change the adjustments you've got to make in your swing.
No, but the force of your swing becomes very,
sure, but
very
Julio
different.
Is swinging the... It's not a problem with how hard he's swinging it. The problem, as you said, is in some of the fine adjustments. So, I don't know. I'm not buying that one yet, I got to tell you. I'm not saying it's wrong, but I'm not buying it.
Yeah, and I'm not writing in stone.
I'm not writing it on my tablet yet. I'm not buying it.
It's not one of my Ten Commandments.
You good?
Ranked.
Yeah, I said it's time for ranked. Play the damn music.
I couldn't tell what you said.
I said it's time for ranked.
Got a list? Oh, that's good because we forgot ours.
Why are we ranking people?
I don't remember.
Consistency. Like, that's what they lack. Consistency. Mm-hmm.
We'll take that list and put it in some kind of order for you. Eventually, making it as complicated and convoluted as we can along the way.
Nah, man, it wasn't good enough. It wasn't good enough.
This is chaos.
Well, you certainly provided a little chaos. I mean, if you're going to sabotage it, then of course it's going to sound like chaos.
You noticed the use of we in that intro that Maura made?
Mm-hmm.
That's
exactly right. Justin, today we are ranking Shine.
Shine?
Yeah. Shine.
Yesterday there was some shine missing in a whole swath of the country, Brock. Yes. I don't know if you saw that.
Path of totality.
Yeah, and I heard Brock use the word totality a couple times today, and I wasn't sure if that was just recency bias.
That was a bit much, was it not?
Oh, way too much.
Goodness gracious.
Kyle was telling us that there was a woman who called one of the mayors in a small Texas town and complained that he had scheduled the eclipse on a Monday instead of a Sunday.
That's terrific.
Yeah.
I mean, it was real.
Sorry about that.
It was real in Cleveland. It got real dark in the afternoon.
Yeah, they were in the path of totality.
Sheesh.
All right. Well, today we are ranking Shine's Brock, like Pink Floyd.
That's Pink Floyd.
Which many would argue should be in the top five.
Yeah, I'm sure many would.
You a big Pink Floyd guy, Justin?
Love Pink Floyd.
Yeah.
I can't. I like the one.
Love
Everybody loves The Shining, but it's not going in my top five. Sorry, it's too scary. Shouldn't even play that on the radio. It's terrible. It's terrifying. Just terrifying. No, thank you.
Okay.
We got some Shine Down. You knew that was going to be on here.
Sometimes goodbye is a second chance.
This is your kind of rock right there, Justin.
The least aggressive Shine Down we had in the system in there for you.
I kind of confuse Shinedown and Finger 11.
I could see that.
They're kind of the same.
And Singer Shinedown's better voice, but yeah, I see where you're going with it.
You know what shined, Justin, for me and you?
The Sunshine State?
Fernandina Beach.
Oh, yeah. Fernandina Beach shines. Is great.
When you woke up there, Brock, did you sing Rise and Shine and Give God Your Glory, Glory, Rise and Shine
and Give God the Glory, Glory,
Brock,
Give God the
Did
glory.
You see anybody leaving the Palace Saloon with a Shiner?
Second oldest bar
after drinking some Shiner Bock?
Yeah.
In America.
From Shiner's.
Oh, that's a good call. Second oldest bar in America. Do you realize that, Saul?
It's about to get a shoe shine, I'm told. Earth, Wind, and Fire. There you go. For those of you who were older and remember 1969, the play Hair, Brock, which featured a big hit from the Fifth Dimension. It starts with the Age of Aquarius and ends with... Let the sunshine. There you go.
Hey, you know when Amelia Island really shines, Justin? During their shrimp festival.
Oh, I would have loved to have gone.
3 days, really? Shut the whole place down. Busiest time of the year in May.
Man, yep. That sounds awesome. Loved that. Didn't see it.
Yeah, you are. How's this not top five?
Treated
this
the
feels really good.
That big song.
Whoa!
It's a big one. No doubt. And then we got the Brady Bunch. You like the Brady Bunch movie? You never saw it. You were too busy watching film.
Mm-hmm.
Right, there you go. I think we have one that we forgot.
Oh, go ahead.
I do have one that we forgot.
What's that? Oh, Outshine. That's actually a top five Shine.
I know.
Whoa, that's good.
That's a top five Shine right there.
Wow.
Darn it, Justin.
Sorry.
Wish you hadn't even told me.
Is that Stone Temple? Who's that?
That's Soundgarden.
I mean, you're getting there.
Hurts. That one really hurts right there. You got Shiny from Moana, Shiny Toy Guns. I'm not even going to mention Shiny Happy People because we don't need to.
What?
This little light of mine, Brock, you know what you're going to do?
Shine.
Let it shine. That's
what about
right.
your favorite character from Remember the Titans?
Sunshine. He's from California.
Thank you, 253, for calling that out.
Let's see. You got Shine a Light from the Black Keys, Let the Sun Shine Down on Me from Jackal. Shine Bright Like a Diamond from Rihanna. Sunshine Alice in Chains. Mr. Sunshine on My Shoulders, John Denver. You Are My Sunshine, Brock, My Only Sunshine. You Make Me Happy When Skies Are Gray.
Quite a bit of sunshine. Eternal Sunshine of Spots.
For sure. Little Miss Sunshine.
And I love when people just listen.
I like these rain or shine, for sure. All right, number five.
Good day, sunshine.
Beatles. In retrospect, now that you've mentioned Outshined, I realize that probably should have been in the top five. But what are you going to do?
It's tough. Maybe if more helps us out, we would have thought of a
I know. Soundtrack. Instead, she's working against us, and that just makes our life a little bit harder. Number four.
You guys
four,
had 5,000 songs today. You didn't need any help.
We needed Outshined.
Help narrowing it down.
We needed Outshined.
Yeah, clearly missed one.
Number four, one of the catchiest songs you'll ever hear.
Brother and sister.
Is that true?
Yeah.
One Hit Wonders Len.
Len.
From like 1998, 99.
If they do a reunion tour, I'm going to that show.
Why would they?
I mean, they were around for quite a long time.
They were?
To sing their one song?
I never heard anything other than that.
I did.
That seemed like a One Hit Wonder to me.
I had that on CD. Loved it.
Number three.
Ain't no sunshine when she's gone.
Oh, that's good.
Got Brock back.
It's not warm when she's away. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone.
The Withers is incredible, isn't he?
So good.
What are the words, Brock?
Don't worry about that. when she's gone. So far away.
I know. All right, well, there you go. Bill Withers, number three with Ain't No Sunshine.
I'm not going to have...
Number two.
In the sunshine of your love.
Sunshine of Your Love, Cream, Eric Clapton, Ginger Baker, Jack Bruce.
That must mean you're not going to give number one to the spot that I would be giving it to.
Oh, really? Yeah. Sunshine of My Life, Stevie Wonder?
Nope.
Shine, the movie from a few years ago?
Nope.
Shine a Light by Common?
Nope.
Wow.
You didn't play it.
All right. Well, I have number one.
Go.
Well, people may argue against this. Maybe they don't think it's number one, but I would say this song was played more and longer than any other song that's ever been on the radio. It was on more stations for a longer amount of time and played the most often of any song in my lifetime. Wow. Rock stations, pop stations, soft rock stations.
Christian stations. This song,
yeah, quite frankly, yes, bro.
Yes.
This song was everywhere.
Yes, you're doing it.
Heaven let your light shine down.
Collective Soul.
Whoa!
I was terrified this was going to happen.
It's number one.
Is that Creed?
Yes.
That's Collective Soul, Brock.
Is that Creed?
Yeah. Singing about heaven letting your light shine down.
Heck yeah.
Collective Soul, Finger 11, Shine Down. They're all not too far apart.
I don't know whether I've ever heard a song.
Whoa!
Loved that song.
Where the
River Flows was one of the songs I used to walk up when I was.
We had that
baseball.
One last week for River.
That's a great.
Rivers, right.
Whoa!
Rivers, Rodriguez, report. We got to go. All right.
That lived up to the title of Chaos.
Yep. We tried. Doing the best we can, Maura. Title of Chaos.
Shine now. Whoa. Okay.
Please stop singing now. It's time for us to move it along. It's time for us to go. We had Scott Service on if you want to buy tickets to go to his big event to benefit the Okanagan Animals Shelter. GiveButter.com/allpawsondeck. I bought my ticket, Brock. I'm going to go. How about that? Thursday night should be a lot of fun at Moss Bay Hall in Kirkland. And you can even bid on golf with Scott. How about that?
Pretty cool.
We're going to run. We'll be back tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. Stick around for Bump and Stacy next. Until then, hey.
Bar.
See everybody.
Shine up.